This is Living Lab on The Point. I'm Heather Goldstone. There's increasing recognition that art can be a powerful and effective way to communicate scientific ideas. And we here at Living Lab love to explore the intersection between art, science, and technology. So today, we're going to hear about a project taking shape in Boston Harbor with the goal of raising awareness about our relationship with the ocean. We'll also hear a story from the PRX STEM Story Project about the challenges of trying to digitally mimic the sound of a fine acoustic violin. And then we'll leave the virtual behind and learn why so many snowy owls are descending on New England this winter. That's all ahead this hour. Now we turn to Brian Kane. He's a Cambridge-based contemporary media artist working in sculpture, video, and interactive media. He teaches at Rhode Island School of Design. His newest project is a three-way collaboration with Boston-based Harbor Arts and the Lightship Nantucket. Brian, welcome.
Hi. How are you?
And also joining us here in the studio is Matt Pollack, Executive Director of Harbor Arts. Matt, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine and glad to have you guys both here. Tell us about this new project. I don't think we're going to spoil anybody's experience if we try to describe what it is you have planned. What is this new project with the Lightship Nantucket and Harbor Arts going to look like?
The idea that we're working on is stringing up a flexible LED video display across the masts of the historic Nantucket Lightship, which is now parked in Boston Harbor in East Boston. So it's roughly 80 feet by 50 feet flexible array of LEDs. And when it gets hung, it'll be able to flex like a sail. So it's playing off the idea of a sail in the harbor, but it'll be lit up and we'll be able to do abstract patterns as well as images and video on the harbor. So when you look at it, it'll be visible from almost all of Boston Harbor, and you'll see the image, and it'll get subtly distorted as it flexes, and then you'll get the reflections in the water.
Is there a message that is intended to be conveyed by this project?
No, there's no direct message. The goal is really to create sort of a digital monument for Boston. So we want it to be a landmark sculpture for the city. And what we're hoping to do is tie together the history of Boston using the ship and the harbor, tie together the high-tech community, because this is a very innovative high-tech project, and then tie together a lot of the arts groups and community. So we're trying to pull that all together into one project. So there's an interactive component where the public is going to be able to upload and post their own images onto the display.
Hmm. Now, Matt, this is kind of part of the Harbor Arts project, which has really over the past few years started to transform what Boston Harbor Shipyard looks like. I mean, this is an active industrial shipyard, and yet it's now dotted with large-scale sculptures, with paintings, with these fabulous larger-than-life tattoos essentially painted onto the dock. How did this project get started, and what is the goal of putting all of this public art in such an industrial space?
It started in 2009 as an idea by our founder, Steve Israel, who thought that the best way to get people to think about global issues is to kind of put something in an unexpected place that kind of gets people to stop and think. So he created the Cod, our first sculpture and our mascot, and put it on top of this roof in Boston Harbor Shipyard.
And we should say this Cod, I mean, we're talking...
It's 40 foot.
40 foot long.
Steel
it's enormous.
Cod, yeah. It's big. And, you know, it's kind of... That was the initial idea of Harbor Arts, was to kind of wow factor, you know, sized sculptures that would get people thinking. And that brings an opportunity for us to start a dialogue about, you know, anything really. But, you know, specifically when we first got started, it was about environmental issues that face our oceans and waterways.
I mean, these sculptures are, you know, like the Cod is on top of a roof. There's another very large sculpture on top of a roof. It's not like there are plaques next to them that explain the Cod are, you know, have been overfished, or explicit information about ocean information. So is this really just supposed to, as you said, inspire thought, or is there kind of an informational or educational component to it?
A little bit of both. I mean, mostly inspires thought. you know, kind of as you said, we've got sculptures on top of buildings, we've got sculptures on walls, we've got sculptures in corners, we've got paintings and murals as well. It's kind of, I like to tell people it's like a Where's Waldo of artwork when you go to the shipyard, because, you know, some things are right in front of you and then some you kind of have to look a little deeper to find.
We visited last week, and it really is. Once you start looking, you know, there's one sculpture, I believe you said it's the name of it's a kite.
French flare kite.
When I first saw it, I mean, it's very reflective metal. And while we were there, it didn't really perform its purpose because we were there in the middle of a snowstorm. And so there wasn't a lot of sunlight to be reflected onto the parking lot. But this is supposed to, you know, reflect and create a kind of rainbow array on the parking lot.
It does kind of dance, yeah. When it gets hit by the wind, and I don't really know actually with that particular piece if it was something that the artist planned or not, but it does have this really cool effect where when the sun's in the right place and the wind is doing the right thing, it does create this dancing reflection on the parking lot, which is really cool to watch. But going back to your question before about, you know, plaques and education, you know, we do, you know, a lot of the pieces do have plaques, not all of them, but it does offer an opportunity to, you know, the plaques that we have now are dedicated to member organizations of the Massachusetts Ocean Coalition. So it gives us an opportunity to talk about some of the issues, you know, facing our planet and also organizations that are currently dealing with those issues. So.
Well, and back to your, you know, Where's Waldo point, like when I first saw the French flare kite, it's mounted on essentially the corner of a building which has loading docks on it. And my first thought was that I was looking at a large mirror for trucks backing up to the loading docks. And once you pointed out that that was actually one of the pieces of artwork, it made me sort of second guess as I walked around the whole shipyard. Is what I'm looking at a piece of artwork, or is it a working part of the shipyard? And that was in no way, I don't think, a negative reflection on any of the artwork. It was simply that there are so many visually stimulating things in the shipyard itself that it was sometimes hard to distinguish what was sculpture and what was part of real life.
It's extremely visually stimulating. And yeah, it's something that we like to play with a lot too. You know, what's art and what's not. And I think what a lot of people come to realize is all of it's art. Even the things that weren't placed there by an artist, you know, even the giant cranes and big machines and the boats themselves are artwork. And when we get to put, you know, artists' work within that space, it's a fun game, you know, because, you know, you get to decide what's the art, you know.
Play with those boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brian, you use a lot of different technologies in your various forms of artwork. For you, where is this boundary between what is art and perhaps what is functional technology or maybe less artistic communication? Or is there a boundary?
I'm not sure if there is a boundary, but I'm definitely interested in pushing that a little bit further. So I've been working with different types of technology and art for about 30 years. More and more, I'm interested in art in the public space. And so that's what we're trying to do with this project.
And what is it about art in a public space as opposed to, say, a museum or gallery setting that appeals to you?
Well, what I like about public art is that it's available to a much bigger group of people. So when you have work that's in a gallery or a museum, those are self-selected people that have chosen to go in and they have chosen that they want to go see art. When you put art in a public space, it's going to get seen by people that are just passing by. Maybe they haven't chosen to go see that. So you have to speak a much broader language. It has to be a lot more inclusive and accessible, and you can try to be thought-provoking, but I think you want to leave a lot of room for interpretation, so you want to leave a lot of openness to it. And it's a bigger challenge to make a great piece of public art. It's fun, but it's a lot harder than doing stuff that's just going to get seen by a smaller group of people. But I think it's very exciting. And what we're trying to do with this, and this is where I think the technology comes in, is that we can make it a participatory sculpture, so we can open it up to the public to actually make it, be a part of it. So
You said that people could upload images, that this array of LEDs could display different images.
Right.
Can the array itself change shape in any way? Is that part of it, or does it always stay as essentially the sail configuration?
No one is going to be able to change the shape by control. So it's going to change its shape based upon the way that the wind is blowing. And it's, even that's going to be semi-constrained, but it'll have a lot of flex to it the way a sail would.
I mean, that's kind of a neat interaction with the natural world, that you can put an image there, but you can't completely control what it's going to look like if this sail is kind of distorting in different ways based on the wind or the weather.
And that was the origin of this idea, was to have that combination of technology and nature interacting to create something that was unique and would never be the same twice. So yeah, you've got the bend of the wind and the flex and the reflection in the water. And then, of course, you get into the whole culture historical piece where we're using the lightship, and there's a whole lot.
Well, of course, that's a great, you know, you're kind of playing off the idea that this was a lightship provided light, and now in this very new way, lighting it up with this whole array of LEDs.
Right, which is why we're still calling the project the lightship, because it is. It's a reinvented lightship for the 21st century, I think. And I don't think that it overshadows any of the history. I think it really just highlights some of the history of the ship, which is, as I've learned about it, it's just a fascinating piece of history. And in particular for Boston, you know, Boston has so much history. There's so much history in Boston Harbor that I think to come in and just throw in this massive piece of super modern art would be a little bit out of place. So I think you do want to use that historic component, especially if you want to bring the public in.
Now, speaking of bringing the public in, I mean, as we've said, this is in Boston Harbor Shipyard. It's in East Boston, kind of. It's not right downtown. It's not necessarily in everybody's daily way, especially if you're talking about tourists. So how do you draw people into the Boston Harbor Shipyard to look at art?
Well, I think one thing to remember, though, is that it's also right in the midst of Jeffreys Point neighborhood, the whole Maverick surrounding neighborhoods of East Boston. And we get a lot of foot traffic from residents that live around the neighborhood. People like to come here for a walk. People come with their dog. During the summer, people come and just kind of hang out. There's a restaurant in the shipyard that people like to go to. And we do get tourists, and it's usually the funkier tourists. It's usually the people that are looking for things to do off the beaten path, you know, instead of going to the MFA or the ICA or, the science museum. They are looking for something a little bit more interesting, and unique.
How do your industrial neighbors respond both to having this artwork all around them, and also then to having this civilian, for lack of a better word, this extra foot traffic through what is a very industrial work zone, potentially dangerous with large machines and heavy objects? Do they welcome this, or is this something that it has been a little getting used to?
It's funny because it's mostly the people that would be visiting the shipyard that kind of have a lot of that thought, because they walk up to the gate and there's a guard shack and there's a gate that drops down, and a lot of people kind of walk up and they're like, can I go in here? It doesn't really seem that welcoming, but yes, you can. And, I think as far as the workers go, it lightens it up a lot. You know, it really brightens the whole vibe of this industrial workspace. And I think, you know, in talking to a lot of the people that work there, they enjoy the opportunity to participate in it as well. When we hang art, when we place art in various, places in the shipyard, we utilize the help of workers of the shipyard, and they're extremely generous people. They love doing they love being a part of what we do.
I mean, I can
do.
See that would be a really nice addition to their day, to come to work essentially in a sculpture garden.
Yeah, I'd say it's a pretty rare experience for a shipyard worker to be able to, participate in a public art project.
You're listening to Living Lab on The Point. I'm Heather Goldstone. My guests this hour are contemporary media artist Brian Kane And Matt Pollack, executive director of Boston-based Harbor Arts, we're talking about a new project involving the lightship Nantucket, which is going to be rigged with an LED array in the shape of a sail that can project different images and become essentially a monumental work of public art in Boston Harbor, also interactive. Brian Kane, in terms of this industrial setting for the art, is there also perhaps a larger commentary to be made about the relationship between different segments of our society, between industry and art, science, technology, and the way that we go about our larger lives, kind of raising awareness of the back end, perhaps, of our daily lives and the industrial side of things that we all rely on?
Well, that's a big question. Yeah, so I think that as artists attempt to make art in the public sphere, what they can do is they can provide these moments of contemplation in people's regular lives that highlight something that they maybe wouldn't think about, that provides a little bit of inspiration in a place where it's unexpected. And for me, that's really the most important thing that art can do. I think with a great piece of public sculpture, you can really make somebody's day. And part of that comes from having something in an unexpected place. So if it's something that's beautiful over there in that old shipyard that nobody ever thought about before, all of a sudden you're providing a new context and you're providing a new experience for people. And it's something to stop and think about, share with your friends, and hopefully provides, some type of insight and inspiration.
Now, I was perusing your website, looking at some of your most recent work, and as we've alluded to, you often incorporate technology into your artwork or are using technology to produce your artwork. But at the same time, some of your sculptures and images seem to have, whether it's a direct commentary or, as you said, prompting people to think about the role of technology in our lives. And I'm thinking in particular your sculpture made out of stone of an iPad and an iPhone. What does that say about our reliance on these technologies? And also another image of a woman with what I think you called was a mobile privacy device, which was essentially a piece of cardboard on the end of a stick that she could hold over her face to hide her eyes, kind of like a medieval mask, but without the eye holes. Are you trying to make a commentary about technology or simply get people thinking about its role in our lives?
It's what I like to call digitalism. So it's the culture of technology more than the technology itself. And so as these devices and these behaviors and these activities become more and more and more part of our lives, well, there's a culture that's a part of that. So in particular, looking at things like the granite iPhone and the granite iPad, that came from having done this work for a long time. I came to the sudden realization that all of these things that we're doing, whether it's artwork or the devices that we're using and the Instagram pictures and our Twitter statuses, that's all going to disappear within a very short period of time. It's not going to last. So, how can you make something that makes it last?
Essentially documenting this period when we are in such an intensely digitized culture.
Exactly. And then looking back historically and saying, well, what's made it? What do we have from a couple thousand years ago that's made it this far? Well, it's mostly stone and bronze. That's pretty much what's made it. So how can I do something now that reflects our current culture and pass that along so that in 1,000 years they'll know what we were doing or what we were thinking about and what we were working with? And then so I started to make these objects out of stone.
So then in terms of your project with Harbor Arts, the goal of Harbor Arts being to raise awareness about the ocean, our relationship with ocean, when you're doing something that's very technical, like an LED array, I mean, does that have its own environmental footprint? And it's, is that trying to use, or are we using technology in some way to connect us to nature?
I hope so. It's, a lot of research has gone into this. So it's going to have a very, very, very minimal environmental impact, a very small footprint. So we're using these super efficient LEDs that are super bright, but yet they can get powered by the equivalent of just a few incandescent light bulbs. So it's got a very, very minimal...
And how will it be powered? Is it going to be plugged into an extension cord essentially running down the dock or
initially
batteries?
it's going to get powered off the ship generator, but what we're looking at is hooking it up to some solar panels so that it can be all self-contained, but it's sort of a multi-step process. So first we want to get this thing up and running, and then we'll make it solar. This is some really interesting technology. That it's a super low power, very, very bright. And
I mean, do you see any irony, I guess, in using really high-tech media art to try to connect people to nature?
Sure. Yeah. And, you know,
and you have no problem with that?
Oh, I love irony. Irony is a great, you know, irony is always good in art. It gets people thinking. But we're not making something that's really going to be toxic or deadly in any way. So we're always trying to think about that. You know, the genesis, because this project has gone through a lot of research now and some changes. So it started from about a year and a half ago when I did a piece out on the barge out in the harbor for Harbor Arts, which was a big LED tree. As part of thinking about... we were talking about digitalism and this culture of digital. So what I've been trying to do for the last few years is take these digital experiences and make them physical. So it's taking our virtual experiences and making them physical in the real world so people can actually encounter them physically. And so I had set out to simulate a Photoshop selection or marching ants. I don't know if you're familiar with that. When you make a selection in Photoshop, it's this thing called the marching ants. It's a black and white outline. Mm-hmm. So we built one of those, a big one. It's like, I think it was like 18 feet tall by 40 feet wide on the barge in the harbor.
Wow.
2 years ago. And it was a very popular piece and people really liked it. And it had high visibility from the whole city. So it brought a lot of attention to Harbor Arts. And...
Mm-hmm. Well, you were talking about bringing the virtual world into the real world. And we recently... had a show about 3D printing, and that was kind of the theme, is that this is perhaps one of the major themes of our culture going through the 21st century, is that we are in this intensely digital age, and 3D printing provides us a technology to bring that digital world into the real world. And you've actually been using 3D printing in some of your art as well.
Yep. Yeah.
And
so
you brought along a few trinkets.
Yeah, I brought along some trinkets. So
do you think that using that technology, I mean, the things that you brought, are they things that could only be made by 3D printing? Or is the use of that technology a conscious choice in terms of what you're saying about this digital era?
Couple of these pieces could only be made by 3D printing. One of them, this one, I could have made in other ways.
I mean, you're pointing with the one that could be made in other ways. It's like one of the little counter clicker machines that I always think of the cafeteria workers in schools would always click to see how many kids had come through the lunch line. But this one has essentially a 3D printed,
it's an analog
like button on it.
Yeah, it's an analog liker. So that's for people that don't have Facebook, so they can like things.
We're up to 101 likes now.
Because we can only like things if we click it on Facebook.
Yeah, well, so but this is, if you don't have Facebook, you can like something in the real world. I only think 3D printing is interesting if you're making interesting things. So there's a lot of, it's very trendy right now to make things in 3D printers. But it's no more interesting because it came out of a 3D printer than if it came out of a lathe or something else. So
in the end, it's really about the end product.
In the end, it's about the idea and about what you're trying to communicate to somebody, you know?
Right. Now, Matt and Brian, you talked a little bit about how this, you know, came out of this previous collaboration. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about how the idea for this specific sculpture came about.
After we did the original sculpture, which is called Paste, and there's some pictures and video of that on my website, Matt came and said, well, let's do that permanent, because everybody liked this, and said, hey, let's make this a permanent feature.
Yeah, and make it bigger, too.
Make it bigger. And
so, Matt, in terms of the art that's involved in Harbor Arts, how much of that is permanent and how much of it is transient, kind of changing on a regular basis?
Well, our permanent collection itself is kind of a rolling show. You know, things come and things go, depending on the piece, depending on the artist. You know, things range at the gallery from, you know, a few months, sometimes even just for one event, but, you know, typically for a few months to a few years. A lot of the things that we have in the gallery are from our first show in 2010. I think a lot of times artists put things there. They bring things to the gallery thinking, oh, this is cool, I'll show it here for a while and then take it somewhere else. And then a lot of times I think people say, well, I really like it being there because it's such an interesting place. And I think a lot of times for the artist, it's a different, you know, they put things at Harbor Arts for a different reason than just the, you know, the publicity or the audience that they get, you know, from say another gallery. You know, it's also just the experience of putting the art there is very special as well. It being a working shipyard, it's probably to my knowledge and maybe the only shipyard that's the only working shipyard that is also a sculpture park.
Now, at one point, I know Harbor Arts is looking at expanding into maybe a more permanent presence and in the shipyard. And at one point, you walked us through an old, I guess, manufacturing and warehouse currently being used essentially as a garage for large vehicles. And out the back door and into this little space behind it, where you said you're talking about creating more of a community space, community gardens. So it seems like you're expanding perhaps away from just the ocean awareness that was the original impetus, but also into just more broadly environmental awareness and communities coming together around the environment.
Yeah. When we first started, we were very much focused on being an environmental organization. And I think what we've come to realize is that, you know, we're really liking, you know, doing the arts side of it and, you know, not by any means forgetting about, you know, that we want to be environmentally conscious organization and also teaching people about what it means to be environmentally aware. But
also just enjoying the art for the sake of the art.
Yes. But also it's about the community, too. We realized after a few years of doing this that, you know, this is doing something for the community that, you know, people are really, really, it's enhancing people's lives that live here and from people who don't live here. You know, it's adding something to people's lives, just coming to experience the artwork. And so, you know, when we think about growing, you know, in the next few years, we're definitely thinking about, you know, what can we do to enhance that part of it? Keep talking about the environment, but, you know, keep enhancing the arts. Right now we're displaying art and we want to be making it at our location as well.
And so, of course, that's what this project will be. You'll be making the art there as well. And so it sounds like this is not only using the technology to connect people to the natural world, but using the technology to connect people to each other. And I think we often talk about, anyway, these days, about the fact that things like Facebook or various digital technologies are perhaps making us more distant from each other, breaking down some of those person-to-person connections. And this is maybe a possibility to use technology and art to build community.
Exactly. We've slated out segments of time on the display. So specifically, there's a segment of time that's going to go to the East Boston school system so that the students in the East Boston school system will be able to put up images on the screen and it will be seen by everyone in Boston. And then we can slice off some time that can just get donated to different arts organizations. So it's an interesting sculpture in that it's not necessarily one thing, but it's really a space where a lot of people can build community around it. You can bring people together. We're hoping, you know, to bring people over also to the ship, because the ship is a great piece of history. So it, you know, it'll tie in the ship and they can have events and use the ship as a community space for people to spend time. These are the types of things that I think are really sort of on the cutting edge of what's going on with with technology and public art is that you can create something that's not necessarily just one thing, but that actually involves a lot of people, and it's changeable. So people can bring different things to it. It's not necessarily just a single thing.
It's not a one-way thing.
It's not a one-way thing. It's a dialogue.
It's not just created by you.
It's a dialogue. And it's using all of this technology that's in our life now, you know. So people, what we're thinking about is that people could use their iPhones to record an animated GIF, which is sort of a popular thing now. And then they would post that animated GIF, and then we'd have to curate it to make sure that it's not inappropriate. But assuming that it was good, you know, can be shown to the public, that within just a few minutes we could have that on the screen. So if you're standing in the Boston Harbor, you could upload a GIF, and within a few minutes you can see that image on the screen. And we think that's kind of interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah. Now, when do you expect this to actually go up?
Well, we're hoping next summer. So it's taken a while to organize this. We had to do a lot of research and figure out the technology that we were going to use, and then had to meet with the ship owner, and that's been a whole series of meetings and talking about that. Now we're getting into the fundraising period, so we're hoping that we'll be done with that in the next few months.
Now, Matt, we have just a couple minutes left, but when we visited the shipyard, you said that there had been an accident very recently. A shipyard worker was actually killed, and you were thinking about how Harbor Arts might respond to that or memorialize that event. Any more thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, we're kind of talking to some people now about what we can do to honor the shipyard worker who was killed. There's some talk about whether or not we, you know, raise money for a charity or for family members or you know, if that's appropriate. But I certainly think that in the near future, you'll see, yeah, there will either be something made specifically for that worker, or we will at a minimum have a plaque. You know, each of our plaques for artwork that we have has, you know, the artist statement and then a dedication paragraph. And we definitely want to have that.
Some artwork dedicated to this,
yeah,
to this worker.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
All right. That's Matt Pollock, Executive Director of Harbor Arts. Also spoke with contemporary media artist Brian Kane. Thank you both.
Thanks.
Looking forward to seeing this project come to fruition. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll learn why it's so hard to digitally mimic the sound of a fine acoustic violin and why so many snowy owls are visiting the Cape this winter. Stay with us.